640. Welcome to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. You are here for a ride with me for the next 3 hours. And you know what we're going to do? We're going to open your mind. We're going to open your eyes. You are going to be learn how to forgive yourself for anything, because I'm all about being a human being and understanding that we are perfectly imperfect, flawed, fabulous people. And I specialize in the science of love. What place on the planet do our flaws show up more than anything than in our intimate relationships? In fact, I often say that nobody is crazy. Nobody has mental health problems unless they're in a relationship. Not that the relationships cause it, but that if you're not in a relationship, nobody really knows. Before we get going, and I expand on this, first of all, stay with me for 3 hours. We've got so much coming up. If you're a man, I want to tell you that you may be suffering in your relationships because you have a disadvantage against women when it comes to language compared to women. Turns out, women have more emotional words for language, and we are leaving you in the dust. And you're like, why'd she say that? And I also, for everybody of all genders, I have a test that I'm going to tell you about where you can test your own emotional intelligence. I want to talk about how you can make your relationships better. Of course, I'm going to talk about my two viral TikTok videos of the week, all about slow love and how to slow down the pace of a new relationship so that you can grow the important clue, the emotional intimacy. But before we get going, let's say hello to the crew. We have Andrew Caravella in the newsroom behind the glass there.
Hey, hey.
Hi, darling. How are you?
I'm good. Good to see you.
I have my glasses on that I can only see up close, so I have to put them down and look over them to see you. How are you?
I'm great.
Producer Kayla, you're back from the East Coast.
I'm back from the East Coast, and I'm so excited to hear about your viral videos and what you're teaching us today.
There's always something going
always
on.
Always going viral.
TikTok is a weird world, isn't it?
It is.
So you were at a wedding.
I was, and you were at a wedding.
I was at the wedding in Canada. You were at the wedding in New Jersey. How was it being a bridesmaid?
I wasn't a bridesmaid. I was the MC for the reception.
Oh,
she didn't
perfect.
Have any bridesmaids except for her sister because she's very expensive. However, I was part of the bride tribe, and it was a lot of work, but it was absolutely beautiful to be a part of. I had the best time.
We are seeing double the amount of weddings because I think December was at a wedding. A lot of our friends were at weddings because all the 2020 weddings got canceled. All the 2020 ones, people fell in love during COVID and coupled up. And now we got double the amount of weddings. So it's weird. We're going to weddings on like Wednesdays and Thursdays.
Crazy.
I know. David, you're on the board. You with us?
Yep, I got you.
Wonderful. And you're going to watch the clock for me.
Yes, ma'am.
Because you know what I do. All right. So I was having this conversation with my boyfriend. And I'm surprised. I mean, he's been listening to my show for a year now. And he said, how come you never talk about mental health? And I'm like, dude, it's all mental health. That is all I talk about is mental health. He goes, no, you talk about relationships. And I'm like, actually, relationships are so intrinsically connected to our mental health, right? So our psychopathology plays out in our relationships. Nobody shows up at a therapist's office and says, you know, I'm feeling like my mental health is suffering a little bit. I would like a little brush up, some treatment, please. They show up at therapy because they're crying after a breakup, or they've fallen in love with somebody and they're not sure if it's the one, or God forbid a court has sent them there because there's been domestic violence or something, right? It is always in context of us with somebody else. And then we were out walking to breakfast yesterday and we were walking by an individual who was experiencing homelessness and also appeared to be experiencing schizophrenia. And he was talking to the world and whatever. And he said, my boyfriend said, well, you see, he's having mental health issues. And I go, yeah, but he doesn't know because he doesn't have a wife or girlfriend here telling him. He's in his own world, right? So, and I often say, like, a lot of people think, well, I am going to just heal my mental health by like not dating anybody for a while. I just really want to practice self-care and take care of myself. I'll do some meditation. I'll do some yoga. All those things are great as coping strategies against stress. But you don't heal that way. They don't teach you how to be a better person. They don't teach you how to have better relationship skills. all you're doing is avoiding and calming, you know, your neurochemistry when you are feeling anxiety, but you're not really learning anything by just sitting on a mountaintop and saying, you don't come back after a year and go, I'll be a better husband now because I said, for a year. So I talk about mental health in the context of relationships. And when I was sort of, I hate to use this sentence, creating my brand, however long ago, 15 years ago, and I went through the websites of all my potential competitors, all the psychologists out there, and I looked at their websites and they would say, well, I treat addiction, sexuality, couples, individuals. And I would look at it and I was like, they know a little bit of everything, but all of those things show up in relationships, impact relationships. I'm going to focus on one thing and do it right. And the reason why I specialize in the science of love is because it has biological, psychological, and social pieces. And it good, healthy relationships, which can be learned, are so good for our physical health. People in long-term committed relationships, now we'll get into whether monogamy is natural, whether getting married for life is natural and all that stuff. But let me say, long-term committed exclusive relationships are highly correlated with lower rates of heart disease, diabetes, high blood pressure, stroke, longer lives, better mental health, and also the accumulation of more wealth, because there's nothing more expensive than divorce. There's nothing more expensive than having to pay for two houses, right? So it's the opposite. You live together, you're paying for half a house. Hopefully, if it's a two-income household, you know. You know, I was a single mom for 15 years, and my kids used to say to me, well, you know, so-and-so at school has this, and how come we don't have that? And I'd say, because they're in a two-income household. We're in a one-income household. That's what we are. But I also want you to know this. You may think your mental health is grand, but if you enter a traumatic bond, a toxic relationship, this can certainly hurt both your physical health and your mental health. One time I was in a restaurant, a little like a diner thing, and in the booth right behind me were a couple who clearly both of them suffered from some sort of mental illness. And the way they argued in circles for the entire hour and a half that I had to listen to it, nobody made any progress. Nobody got closer. They were arguing facts. They weren't getting underneath to the feelings. And it was like their whole relationship was just one big traumatic bond. You know, your choice of romantic partner is the most important choice you can make for everything. It will determine where you live, who you hang with, how much money you have, what your health is like, how good your career is going to go. Your choice of romantic partner is not like a side dish in your life. It is the main course. Now, when we come back, I want to talk about some problems we have in our mating marketplace. Some problems we have in family models for love. And also, one big, huge problem that I have with one word, and that word is virginity. You're listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Sorry, I'm just dancing here. I forgot I'm supposed to be talking. Am I supposed to be talking, Kayla?
You're supposed to be talking, Dr. Wendy.
Who doesn't love Madonna and Like a Virgin? You picked the best music for this show, producer Kayla.
Thank you.
Before I get into my problem that I have with the word virginity, I mentioned that our choices in intimate partners are clouded by a number of things. One is they're clouded by neurohormones, the neurohormones of lust. You know, remember, in our anthropological past, we probably never laid eyes on more than 150 humans in our entire lifespan. And now literally thousands and thousands of potential mates are one thumb swipe away, no matter what age you are, on the dating apps. And so we are being triggered by what I call junk food sex. Instead of taking the time to let your families get to know that new hunter who wandered into the tribe, so that you all can do a proper assessment. And the other thing is we're meeting complete strangers who aren't connected to our lives, right? The other thing is we have a lopsided mating marketplace right now in most urban cities in America, in that we're seeing more women get educated and make money, and we're seeing an oversupply of successful women. And women, notoriously, I don't agree with it, but they don't like to date down, right? And so they still want to date a guy that has as much education or makes more money than they do. The truth is, there are not enough of those guys to go around, and plenty of them have become players because of access to so many women is so easy. And also, women have a fertility window that men just don't have. So the urgency to find a mate is that much greater for women. Another layer in the science of love. Many of us have faulty models for love in our heads, right? So when we were children, our attachment style was formed partly by genetics and also by how we were treated early in life by our caregivers. And if we were treated poorly, we're going to go out into the mating marketplace and we will find somebody who will meet our worst nightmares because that feels normal to us. That feels familiar. And yes, in answer to one of my followers today, can attachment style be changed? Absolutely it can. So here's the other thing. Everybody's in the mating marketplace together. We have the widest range of sexual behavior of any primate species. The default for reproduction is serial monogamy. But we have a culture informed by pornography, informed by men calling the shots in the backward sexual economy right now. And so many women are completely confused and almost feel embarrassed to ask for commitment, to ask for love, to ask for emotional care. This is the biggest problem we are facing today, as far as I'm concerned. All right, let's get into the problem I have with the word virginity. So I got this lovely email this week from a listener. I hope you're listening. She's a mom. She's written a really great parenting book. And she's a mom of four. But she started her email by saying, and I'm going to paraphrase her and forgive me if I don't say it word for word, but she said something like, you know, Dr. Wendy, I've been listening to you a long time. I'm following you a long time. Our messages are so similar. I have a daughter who's 21 and I tell her she only has her first time the first time and she's got to be careful who she gives it to. And I thought to myself, is that what you think I think? Oh, I must have misspoke. Now, while I do say that slowing the pace of a sexual relationship will allow people of all genders some time to both assess the partner, but also time to fall in love. I mean, a lot of people lead with lust, and then when those neurohormones calm down, they think they've fallen out of love, but they forgot to fall in love in the first place. That's the problem. I understand this mother's concern. You know what? No mom wants to see their daughter hurt, especially the first time she has sex. Which, ladies, if you're a teenager listening, if you're a mom of a teenager listening, please tell your daughters this. It's always bad the first time. Come on. Kayla, do you know anybody who said, oh, when I lost my virginity, it was so hot. I had such a good time.
Not once. No one has ever said that ever.
No one. It's always bad the first time. Okay, so let's break this down a little bit. According to the Centers for Disease Control, by the time they graduate high school, somewhere between a half to two-thirds of adolescents will have engaged in full-on sexual intercourse. This does not include all the other things that can happen on the way to intercourse. But here's this. Now, and this is why this mother is concerned. This is why I'm concerned. I'm going to break down the stats, and then I'm going to tell you how to do it right. If you're a first-timer, if you're a parent of a first-timer, I want to give you a few steps for how to have a better sexual debut. See that word I got rid of there? Okay, here's the bad news. The transition to sexual intercourse, according to the Centers for Disease Control, is associated with increases in levels of depression and anxiety, particularly for girls who enter a sexual relationship before the age of 16. Now, what is the average age? Everyone always asks that, right? Am I normal? That's all people want to know. Am I normal? For those who care, I was 15. All right. So I would be considered a mid-range starter. When we look at research, we look at early starters, mid-range starters, late starters. Early starters are anything 14 and under. Mid is 15 to 17. Late, you're not late, okay? Slightly later are 18 and onward. The research is clear. the later the onset of first sex, the less levels of depression. Oh, higher academic achievement. Actually, you earn more income and have fewer divorces for men and women, all genders, you guys. It's really fascinating. So I found this research out of the state of Virginia, and they say that 61% reported having vaginal or anal sex for the first time between 14 and 17 years age. So that's sort of the average there in the middle. Males reported earlier ages of sexual initiation than females. This is because sex surveys are extremely flawed because of the sexual double standard, right? So what happens is men overreport, women underreport. When we come back, I am going to break down the biological, psychological, social, and environmental pieces to why girls get depressed after the first time. And then I'm going to tell you, everybody, how we can all have a healthier sexual debut. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. KFI AM 640. You have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. This is the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show. We are talking about onset of first sex in your life and mental health outcomes. And I know as a parent, I want to protect my kids. I want them to have all the information out there, but I also want them to live in a sex positive world. Not one filled with junk food sex, mind you, healthy sex that's connected to feelings and a relationship. So before the break, I was saying that the research shows that that generally the earlier sex, the more it's associated with depression, specifically in, or more so in females, but also in some males. Here's another interesting stat I found. Men who have sex with men have the highest proportion of late, they are late bloomers, late sexual initiation. 50% report that they didn't have sex until they're 18 years or older. And in some ways, you know, for all you hear about the promiscuity, the mythology of gay men, to think that men who have sex with men take some time to figure out their sexual identity and it and later. Okay. However, cross-sectional research has found that adolescents who engaged in sexual intercourse are more likely than adolescents who have not to be depressed, to have attempted suicide. And early initiating female adolescents, those are girls, age 13, 14, 15, are at especially high risk. All right, why? What's going on here? Well, I always answer every question from biological, psychological, and social. Biological. I actually have an episode of my Mating Matters podcast called Precocious Puberty, and it's about certain kids that physiologically develop earlier. And as a result, here's this girl who's 8 years old with her period and breasts, and guys are flirting with her by the time she's 10 or 11 or 12, and her body is ready, but her brain sure isn't. Her brain has not developed. So sometimes there are people who have early body maturation before their brain, and that's genetically influenced. So let's talk about psychological. It's very, very common, especially with girls, to feel regret or not feel ready when they've had full sexual intercourse earlier than some of their on-time peers. And, you know, this is partly because of the sexual double standard, the one that gives boys and men points for sexual experience and the one that gives women demerit points. There are also some environmental potential factors, neighborhood poverty and parental rejection in childhood are both linked to early onset of sexual behavior. You know the saying, they're looking for love in all the wrong places, right? Because it's not coming from their family. Now, I don't like the word virginity, though. You see, what virginity does is it frames sexuality as a treasure, as a gift, as something to be given to women or taken from women, or something lost. She lost her virginity. I don't know why, but the hair on my spine goes up whenever I hear someone say she's lost her virginity. And I understand, parents. I know what you're thinking. You're trying to protect your daughter from all these terrible statistics that I just told you about. But How about instead of talking about loss, let's talk about gain? And when I talk about having a healthy sexual debut, we need to talk. And by the way, this was coined by a woman in Toronto who self-describes herself as a sexual freedom philosopher. So last year she put out a book that began with a sort of Dr. Seuss, a play on a Dr. Seuss book called Oh, the Places You'll Go, Oh. And it's sort of a Seuss-style book described as an impish book about the power of female orgasms. And it's written in verse. It's supposed to be cute. You should check it out. But in it, she said, well, if I'm talking about the journey towards sex, what's the starting of the journey? Where's the departure point there? Is it virginity? But everybody hates this obsolete term. So she coined this idea of sexual debut. So I did some research on how we can teach our kids or ourselves, even if it's onset of sex in a new relationship. I don't care if you're 30, 40, or 50. There are lessons here for you too. So let's talk about how to have a great sexual debut. First, talk about it. Now, if you're a teenager, you're going to talk about it to an older sibling, a friend, your doctor. You're going to bounce it off somebody who you feel safe with before you make that big decision to enter a sexual relationship with somebody. Having other eyes on things. Now, once you're a grown-ass woman, you know what we do? We get them, we take your social media profiles and we send them to all our girlfriends. We get them to weigh in. We take screenshots of all your texts. We say, what did he mean when he say this? Honestly, there is an entire tribe that is dating you, dude. Trust me. Entire female tribe. Same thing. Talk about it. Asking the questions. Is he safe? Can it be trusted? The other thing is start slow. And in a few minutes, I've got some advice on how to have slow love. No matter what your age is, how you can have slow love. There's no rule on how long you should date somebody before you begin having sex. If you are 17 years old and you're saying to me, Dr. Wendy, how long should I wait? What is the magic number? The answer is when you fully trust somebody with your eggs, your bloodstream, and your heart, that can take weeks, it can take months, it can take years. And I would say the same thing to a 50-year-old woman. When you have a clear picture of trust. Also, educate yourself. Everybody needs to educate themselves about sexuality. Everything. The plumbing part, the emotional part. I mean, my biggest problem with sex education is it's all about the plumbing. And nobody's talking about the neurohormones and how women are more likely to fall in love because their bodies emit so much oxytocin. And guys don't necessarily associate sex with love at the very beginning, especially if sex begins early in a relationship. They tend to not trust women who have sex with them early. But no matter what, you have to establish trust. And how do you do that? You divulge small, emotional, private details about yourself. Start small, little ones. And what you look for is reciprocation. If they are dismissive, or God forbid they laugh at you, you shouldn't be having sex with this person because they're having sex with an object. That's your body. They're not really seeing you as a human being. So establish trust. Okay, when we come back, I've got a few more tips on how to have a healthy sexual debut and also some slow love tips at any age because Kayla's wrapping me up. She's doing this wrap-up thing right now. I'm trying, but I have a lot I need to say. You are listening to the Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. AM 640, you have Dr. Wendy Walsh with you. Producer Kayla, did you really take me from Madonna to the Bee Gees?
I did.
This is my life being played out in front of me.
I got you, Dr. Wendy.
I love you. If you don't hear me talking, it's because I'm singing and dancing in the background. All right, let's get back to it. Whether you are the parent of a teenager or young adult who's about to embark on a sexual relationship for the first time, or whether you're a late bloomer yourself, or whether you've taken a break and you're coming back to it, or whether you're starting a new relationship, these are good rules for everybody. So how to have a healthy sexual debut? Have fun with foreplay. it shouldn't be like, I hate it when people are like, okay, so we've had a number of dates and now we're going to have sex. I'm like, really? You're going to go from zero to 60 and leave nothing left for the imagination? Is this what the pornography culture has told you is supposed to happen? I don't know about you, but I like starting at first base, going to second, third. Kayla, you're way too young to remember what this is. Shall we guess?
What are these bases?
What are these bases? See? They say, what are these bases? Oh my gosh, I'm pulling my hair out. Okay, first base is kissing.
Okay.
And you could spend a number of dates just passionately kissing. You don't have to go all the way.
Okay, all right.
Did an American Pie explain all this?
I think they did, but I think Kayla's even too young for that. Okay.
I'm not too young for American Pie.
Okay, second base is where you're, in my day, had to do with from the waist up.
So over the shirt or nude, under?
Under the shirt.
Ooh.
Under the shirt, waist up. Okay. Third base, I'm like educating her on 1970s high school language. Third base is below the belt, but no penetration.
So over the pants, not under?
Under, in, skin,
just
everything.
Okay.
You can have a whole date and get just that far and go home, you know.
Who's doing that? Okay, all right, yeah.
I want to stop and just remind every woman on the planet, Andrew, back me up here. An erection is not an emergency. An erection is not a call to action. An erection is never the woman's fault. And if you wait, it just goes away. It's fine.
Okay, if that's what you're saying. All right, does it hurt them? Does that hurt?
You see how women say that? Because there are guys that use that as manipulation. They will lose, like, oh, like they make these moany sounds, like, oh, you have to help me. You have to fix it.
I mean, most of what you said was accurate.
Where was I inaccurate? That it doesn't go away?
Yeah. Oh, woman's fault. I mean, some guys would beg to differ.
It is never the woman's fault.
Oh, my gosh.
Ever, 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 ever. I remember in eighth grade, if you guys have not seen my aha moment on YouTube, that's a talk that I gave about, sort of the whole thing that went on with Fox News and sexual harassment. But it leads up to me telling a lot about my early life. And there's a little story in it where I talk about how in the eighth grade, where we had no air conditioning in our school, and it was like 80 degrees, even in Canada in June, it can be that hot. Remember when school used to let out at the end of June? I don't know what's happened now. Anyway, so I took my denim shirt that buttoned down the front and I unbuttoned it at the bottom and I tied it in a knot, revealing like 2 inches gasp of white Woo-hoo! Midriff. Exactly. And my teacher, Mrs. Miragway, I said, we were lining up to go to the library or something. And she said, Wendy, untie that top. And like embarrassing me in front of everybody and making a whole big deal. And I just said, are you surprised? I said, no. And she said, what?
Good for
you. And I thought her head was going to bust. I said, no. I said, I'm hot. I said, I was really grumpy. So she said, go to the principal's office. So I go to the principal's office and Mr. Forche, the principal, gives me this huge, this is at St. Thomas Catholic School in Ottawa, Canada.
He gives 2 inches at a Catholic school. I mean, that's extreme.
Exactly.
Dr. Wendy's a rebel.
So he gives me this big lecture about how male erections happen. Literally almost implying like it's my fault.
That's a lawsuit in 2021.
I know. And I literally said, I was sitting on his sofa in his thing. His face was so red. He was so mad at me. And I literally said, because I was a very polite 14-year-old, I said, sir, are you saying that it's my fault that those stupid 8th grade boys have erections? And he just said, go in my bathroom right now and fix that shirt or you're going home. Anyway, I was sent home. I was.
You were meant to be Dr. Wendy Welsh. I'll tell you that much.
I was suspended. So it is never a woman's fault. It may be spontaneous. So it's also not the boy's fault. Let's be clear on that. It may be spontaneous, but it's not necessarily the woman's fault. Okay. So back to having a healthy sexual debut. Have fun with foreplay. Take your time. Don't try any acrobatics. I don't care if you've seen porn. I don't care if your mate has seen porn. A first-time sex with a new partner, or if you're just getting into that world as a young person, don't try anything fancy. Okay? Keep it vanilla the first time. Like, Kayla, you look confused.
If it's your first time, I get that. But if you're grown and it's your first time with a new person, you can have fun. No? You can, okay.
Well, that
you could do acrobatics if it's the first time and you're grown.
You don't know that your partner's ready for that. You might be ready for
then
it.
Then they got to go.
Oh!
Bye! JK. Halfway JK.
And finally, need I say this maybe to the teenagers. Folks, remember hygiene, please. You want to be clean for somebody. Okay, so this week, was David telling me to wrap up? He said something in my ear. He's saying wrap up? Okay.
Wrap up, yeah.
This week I had two more TikTok videos go viral, and they're all about slow love tips for any age. So keeping on the theme of slowing things down so we can have better pleasure and a sex-positive world, let's talk about that when we come back. You are listening to The Dr. Wendy Walsh Show on KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.